So, Zach, we'll talk about the game, Nets Sixers. I've had it circled on my calendar for weeks
and
weeks.
First of all, no, do you have a calendar that you actually write on with the pen? I don't think you have it circled on any calendar. I think that's not true.
I have to admit, I have not touched a paper calendar in literal years at this point. Yeah.
How can I believe anything else now for the rest of this podcast?
It's a fair point. All I have is my Google Calendar, and it just says in that all-day sort of format, Ben Simmons in Philly. But speaking of deep calendar analysis, Zach, you know, I did run into Daryl Morey, president of basketball operations of the Sixers, over the weekend at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference in Boston. You well know it. And he was there just loving life, Daryl was. He had his James Harden, like, cartoon meme face t-shirt on. And I told him, just tongue-in-cheekly, like, Daryl, I am so glad that you and James are finally back together again. And his response was like a serious, yeah, it was a long 16 months.
Do you ever think that James Harden, maybe just internally, is like, can you take it a little easy, Daryl? Like, you texted me a lot yesterday. Like, it's like the shirt is a little much. Like, just dial it back a little bit. I have other friends. I have other plans. You ever think just a little bit of that goes through James Harden's mind?
I mean, Daryl's also growing out this beard, and it feels like there is, like, if I'm James Harden, I'm like, are you talented Mr. Ripley-ing me right now? Like, where does this end? Where does this intimate relationship go? There's a stage 5 clinger kind of vibe here, yes.
Well, look, he got his man. Daryl Morey took a lot of flack from a lot of people who said, well, you just got to settle for 75 cents on a dollar. You got to get Buddy Hield and whatever else you can get from Sacramento, Harrison Barnes, you got to do it. And he said, no. I think as the Nets season began to spiral, this went from pipe dream to off-season possibility to, oh, maybe there could be something here.
Something is definitely happening in Philadelphia tonight. Part playoff preview, part homecoming, part torture chamber. When the Brooklyn Nets visit the Sixers for the first time since Ben Simmons got traded for James Harden, exchanging one broken relationship for another, and leaving open wounds behind. So today, Zach Lowe dissects the new-look Sixers and Nets and the contenders stacked atop the Eastern Conference. And he explains how LeBron, meanwhile, is trying to solve the Lakers, and why Nikola Jokic is a puzzle that we still don't understand. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, March 10th. This is ESPN Daily. Zach, I love a good conspiracy. You know, I'll be honest here. And the one that you laid out on your podcast last week, it felt like something that fit very neatly with those long 16 months of winter that Daryl Morey told me about at Sloan last weekend.
Look, I have to say up front, I don't actually believe this is true. The conspiracy theory is very simple. The Sixers and the Rockets and James Harden put a long con on the Nets and use them as a patsy middleman to help themselves in the process. And the theory is simple. James Harden wanted to go to Philly.
When I was going through everything I was going through, in Houston, Philly was my first choice. It just didn't happen.
He said now, Philly's been my top choice all along.
Yeah.
I don't know that was true back in the day. We know Daryl Morey covets James Harden above the Holy Grail, okay? But they couldn't find a deal that worked, maybe because Houston didn't want Ben Simmons. What Houston really wanted was draft picks from the Brooklyn Nets and a whole bunch of swaps. Well, what about, all right, let's send James Harden to Brooklyn, destabilize the Nets so those draft picks become more valuable in the long run, and then James will get himself to Philly. You get James Harden, Daryl Morey. We get more valuable draft picks. The Nets, we just string them along like the Patsy in a long con artist movie. And also, as I've said, Tillman Fertitta will never trade James Harden to Daryl Morey. It's too bitter. The departure, it's the perfect cover. They were so loud about it. And now they're all coming out and saying, this is where I wanted to be all along, this and that. So here's why it's not plausible. Number one, those draft picks are valuable if the Nets fall apart, right? Like, that's what Houston wants. Ben Simmons being so much younger than James Harden would seem to insulate the Nets in like the medium to long term from complete organizational collapse. Number two, I don't think you could have predicted things like a vaccination law that prohibits Kyrie Irving from playing in home games and some road games in the event that James Harden would also go to Brooklyn. That will alienate James Harden, make him a little angry. Some conspiracy theories are like bonkers insane. This one, given all the connections, all the Rockets alums that are in the right. Sixers front office.
No, the CEO is the guy who was Daryl's CEO in Houston, now the guy in Philly. Yes.
You can put up the whiteboard in the background and have the strings and thumbtacks connecting to various
full
people.
Pepe Sylvia, yes. The number one ingredient that a conspiracy theory needs is just a grain, really, of plausibility. And I watch the Sixers now, and I am just huffing what James Harden is giving out, right? What the Sixers have been with James Harden, with the Rockets band back together, transplanted in Philly, they haven't lost with him. They've won the five games they've played with James at point guard. And so when you look at what the Sixers have looked like, what do you see?
I've stopped even looking at the plus minus with Embiid and Harden on the floor together, because it's a lot. Like, it's just a lot of points in the positive direction. When they made the trade, I remember that day, and even obviously we were all thinking about this trade days before it happened. If they can keep Maxey and Thibault and Green, I think they have enough in the tank, enough shooting and enough defense around those two guys to make a title run. They're even better sooner than I thought they would be.
Yes.
They look completely dominant. The way Doc is staggering the minutes has been very smart. Tyrese Maxey is one of the biggest stories in the NBA this season and has been not just a hand-in-glove fit with those two, but like a legitimate third pillar of that team.
It's incredible, Zach. I mean, number one, that they didn't have to give up Tyrese Maxey in this deal in retrospect, but also that he is the third leg of a tripod. I mean, it feels unsustainable how perfect and how good he has been in this role, playing off-ball, doing the stuff from the perimeter that I didn't know he could do this well. What has been most surprising to you about Maxey's fit alongside Harden?
Really only the degree of efficiency of his shooting, and particularly his outside shooting. I mean, they ran a stat that since X date, Tyrese Maxey has the third highest field goal percentage in the league, and it's like two centers ahead of him. I don't remember who they were, but it's like 66% or something. And what I pictured with Maxey is, okay, number one, I have enough faith in his three-point shot now, pre-Harden. I think that's real. He's shooting it off the dribble. He's shooting it off the catch. When guys go under on his picks, he's like, you can't do that to me.
Tyrese, turn around. Are you kidding me?
That jumper has become more and more reliable with each passing game.
The other thing I pictured was, and this is what has been just blow-away awesome, Harden, Embiid, pick and roll. Help defense sinks in a little bit off Maxey, kick to him at like that diagonal wing, and he just flies through that alley before the defense can recover. And he's at the rim.
Here comes Tyrese Maxey. Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness.
You know, Brett Brown used to always say, I don't want Ben Simmons to outrun Joel Embiid. I don't want the offense to outrun Joel Embiid. Those two guys have looked at Max and be like, we'll play just as fast as you, man. We'll run up after rebounds. Like, they are flying up and down the floor. That's a credit to both of them. And I think it's also the biggest piece of evidence that Embiid's conditioning, it's not just good, it's elite.
Yeah, I mean, look, so you remember when I presume you were first like dating your wife and you had to meet the parents and you're on your best behavior? It feels like James Harden is on meet the parents point guard mode right now. Like, let me show you exactly what I wasn't in Brooklyn and in Houston when you most recently saw me.
He's a master of that mode. He could meet the parents over and over and over, win over every new set of parents. It's like the fourth visit happens to the parents' house. It's like, is James still asleep? It's noon. Like, what? Dude, what happened last night?
Why does James have like five multicolored VIP lounge wristbands on right now?
In Brooklyn, he came and he was like, I barely even want to shoot. I'll average 16 assists a game if you guys want. What do you need me to do? So, like, we've seen that movie before, but, you know, I there's no reason to think it'll change because he's walking into a team that he chose and that is dominant right off the start.
And the Embiid aspect of all of this, right? You mentioned his conditioning, and obviously what he's doing right now is, I mean, if it feels like peak Embiid.
If this isn't peak Embiid, then we're going to see something that we've never seen before, basically, because it was already easy for him because he can get to the line so much. But the introduction of Harden has allowed him to balance his game so that it's not so hard for him. He can get 6-7 easy, like catch, flick, buckets a game. And playing with Harden, it's not like he's just going to get dunks and dunks and dunks like Capella. He gets to show off different skills, different touch that he has, catching the ball at the dotted line for hook shots. But yeah, I mean, like, plowing through double teams and having people hit your arms and your shoulders and your back all the time, sometimes you fall over. Like, even if you're 7, whatever he is, and a massive specimen of humanity, that hurts after a while, man. That's, like, not so fun.
And so the feeling going into tonight, Zach, in this game that is as anticipated a regular season game as I can recall, with Ben returning to Philly, I mean, he's not going to be playing because of this back injury, and his mental health is also still the subject of speculation and concern. But Kevin Durant made it pretty clear what they expect.
Nobody's going to hold his hand. I'm sure there's going to be some personal attacks. There's going to be some, you know, something that might, you know, some words that may trigger you as personally. But that's just how fans are. They want to get under our skin. They want to, you know, let their voices be heard.
And so if that's the case, if you are Ben Simmons, Zach, what's your strategy here? Why not just delay the exposure until you're ready to actually be on the court?
I think it's actually, if I'm playing it out from his perspective, I think it's actually kind of smart. Rip the Band-Aid like halfway off by entering the building, walk into the bench. Everyone's going to see you. If they're mean, they'll show you on the Jumbotron.
It's Philly, Zach. I mean, these are the people who pelted Santa with snowballs and also hate whenever you point out that they pelted Santa with snowballs. They're going to be mean.
Hopefully they're more creative than like Simmons sucks. Like, at least come up with like when they did the Trae Young is balding thing in New York, it was like, okay, at least, I mean, that's very superficial and low hanging fruit. So they'll come prepped with, there'll be signs. I don't think they'll confiscate any signs. But then you get to say in your mind, okay, I did it.
No, immersion therapy. That's right. Sort of
I did
slowly
it.
Taking a foot step by step into the ocean.
The real test is going to be when you're in Philly and Doc fouls you on purpose late in the game to take you to the foul line.
Lord.
Or when you catch the ball 12 feet from the rim and the crowd is roaring because they really want you to shoot and they really want you to miss, but they also really want you to not shoot and not get fouled. And like, it's all a win for them.
And so the Nets right now, I mean, what are you seeing from them, Zach? Because this is, again, the presumptive title favorite coming out of the East, but they're like a play-in team right now, right? Around 500, hovering in that 7-10 seed range. Clearly they need Ben Simmons really soon, but what's your diagnosis of Brooklyn right now?
Yeah, we need to retire the title favorite thing. I've said this for like 3 weeks now on TV that I feel like I'm in the twilight zone talking about the Nets, because every question I get is like, well, how deep of a run can they make in the playoffs? And then I look at the standings, I'm like, all they do is lose every game. They lose. Are we sure they're? And I understand what everyone is projecting forward, this fully formed team. Okay, sure. Like, first of all, if they play Toronto in the play-in in Toronto, Kyrie can't play that game. What condition is Simmons going to be in?
Mm.
Like, if you're in the play-in, by definition, you are at risk of not making the playoffs, period. And so that's where they are, and I just need to see them play. And actually, that's why I am curious about this game in Philly, because it's a Kyrie-KD game,
yep.
And we just haven't seen a lot of that in the last 2 or 3 months, just those two guys.
But we did see how well it could work against the Hornets on Tuesday, man. I mean, they won, the Nets did, 132 to 121. Kyrie dropped 50.
Irving cuts inside, dances free, and lays it in. Gordon! just wizardry from Kyrie Irving.
And so how is Ben going to fit into that dynamic?
As a basketball player playing freely, he's a perfect fit on their team for all the reasons that were immediately apparent when this trade became a possibility.
Yeah.
He's an all-world defensive player who can guard every position. And on offense, the comparison everybody made was he clearly is not a ball-dominant point guard in the half court the way that the Sixers needed him to be. Well, he doesn't need to be that player with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. He can be Draymond Green. He can set screens. You double Durant, he slips to the rim. Simmons is now in that Draymond 4-on-3 situation, spray out passes, hopefully attack the rim and not be afraid to get fouled. And if he has to be in the dunker spot a lot, which was his unwanted home in Philly, like, that's okay for the Nets because they have two elite shot creators who can absorb that kind of non-activity in a way Philly could not, because they had no elite perimeter shot creators and one elite post creator who wanted to be in that same home that Simmons was inhabiting. So it's just like the Nets are better equipped to absorb that than the Sixers were.
And the other aspect of the fit, too, is that the Brooklyn fan base is nothing like the city of Philadelphia.
No. The Barclays Center is, if you want to read a book while watching an NBA game, it's in your top three.
Zach, after the break, I want to get into the rest of the open book that has been this NBA season and who else we need to know about.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Zach, for all the talk that I have expended and always expend with you on Philly and Ben Simmons and now the Nets, the team that is still at the very top of the Eastern Conference, of course, is the Miami Heat. And they've been there pretty much the whole time, it feels like. And I am torn between being sarcastic and skeptical about quote-unquote Heat culture and also, admittedly, by now, just like in awe. Where are you on the Heat this season?
I think they're really good. Like, I don't get why. Look, hashtag Heat culture is funny. And I think there's a perception that they're just this sort of try hard group playing above its head, and they'll get in the playoffs and they'll be the number one seed. And then against Milwaukee, they don't have the best player. Against Brooklyn, theoretically, maybe in the first round, actually, they don't have the best player. Against Philly, they don't have the best player. Against Boston, they might not have the best player the way Tatum has played in the last month. And so the best players usually win in the playoffs, and the Heat don't have the best player in any of those matchups. You can characterize the Heat that way if you want. I look at the Heat and I'm like, they have a bunch of really good players, including Jimmy Butler at his peak is on that sort of top 12, top 13 level. And they play defense at a level that no one else in the East other than Boston has consistently reached this season. And they've done it barely ever having their entire team. I mean, they, for the first time ever last night, they had Oladipo. We'll see what he gives them, but they've barely had their four best players together all season. They complement each other. They make each other better on offense. They have a system that is almost like their version of the Warriors in terms of how they use their shooters and the handoffs and the split actions and all that, that is hard to deal with when they're making shots. They are as good as anybody in the East. I don't know what their championship odds are, but for me, they're right there with Milwaukee and Philadelphia in the East.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is happening in the other team you referenced there, another measuring stick for Miami and everyone else in the Heat in Boston, what has happened? Because for 2 months, it was like, oh, this is a play-in team. And then they win 14 of their last 16. And Jason Tatum is, as you said, looking like a guy who just casually drops 50 points. What has changed with Boston
They came into the season. I said this team should be a lock for the top six, so for play-in avoidance, and is closer to third in the East than sixth. For a long time, that looked beyond idiotic.
Yes.
But the reason I was optimistic about them was even pre-trade, even pre-rearranging their roster with Derek White, you looked at their personnel like, okay, offensively, there's going to be some hiccups. Tatum and Brown are going to have to find ways to make each other better, find the balance between scoring and playmaking. Marcus Smart, is he ever going to be an above-average two-point shooter again? Horford would say, oh, like, the offense could be clunky. Defensively, this team should be monstrously good. They're big, they're fast, they're smart, they're switchable, and they were just decent for the first 40 games of the season or 30 games, whatever it was. And since then, they have been not just excellent, but so far and above everybody else in the league. Now, there's a little bit of jump shooting luck baked into that, but they've been awesome defensively. And that's how you pile up wins in the NBA. It's like your jump shooting is going to come and go. You're going to have bad turnover games. If you defend like that every single night, you're going to win tons of games. And that's that. They've gotten better on offense. We could talk about that. It flows a little better now. But it's all about defense to
me. Well, the defense also, the name that comes to mind when I watch this team now is Robert Williams, Time Lord.
Oh, the Time Lord.
So Time Lord, for people who are not familiar with his legend, Zach, explain what he is and what he's doing for the Celtics.
I have to go back and look at how the Time Lord moniker came to be. I know it stems from his lateness, and particularly his lateness to his own introductory press conference. I don't know how the quip came about.
But the point is, it's a very tongue-in-cheek kind of a legend.
He doesn't like it either. I've asked him about it. Are you okay with that being your nickname forever? And he's like, people seem to like it. It's fine. Whatever.
Not up to Time Lord, unfortunately, that he is Time Lord.
There was some crazy stat that Sam Vecenie from The Athletic unearthed before the season that he had played 30 minutes a game once in his entire NBA career before this season, or 20. It might have even been like 28 minutes or something.
Wow.
He just couldn't stay on the floor. Injuries, sometimes foul trouble, oftentimes discipline in the game plan, biting on pump fakes, just making mistakes in the game. He couldn't stay on the floor. And look, players like that are very frustrating to fans. They're frustrating to coaches. But if you watch the film, it was very clear there was a potential, I thought, borderline all-star there waiting to emerge if he could stay on the floor. And that's not just health, because he had a bunch of little injuries here and there. It's discipline, attention to detail. And that's the guy we've seen this year. He's much more dialed in defensively. He doesn't bite on as many pump fakes. He has spurts where he goes back to his old bad habits, but he keeps his feet. He's super fast. He uses his arms. He's an incredible rebounder. He gets off the floor twice in the time it takes normal basketball players to jump once. And Ime Udoka is using him in a super creative way, and he has been totally up to it. And he's just a freaking force.
So beyond the teams we've discussed, Zach, I mean, there are three other teams in the East that look pretty likely to avoid the play-in. And it's the Bucks, it's the Bulls, it's the Cavs. And you noted earlier that you're high on the Bucks. But who else do you think is worthy of adding to that list of contenders?
Of those teams, I think only the Bucks. The Bucks are the defending champs, starting to play a little better. It's been a little uneven by their standards, but at metaphorical gunpoint, they are still my pick to win the East. They have been my pick ever since the Nets situation went haywire. I've had the Nets as the overwhelming favorites to win the title before the season, before knowing what we now know. So it's the Bucks to me. The Bulls, people are beating up on the Bulls. They've lost five in a row. People are beating them up for their bad record against the fellow elite of the East. You look back at those games, like, they've been missing key guys, multiple key guys in so many of those losses. Their defense is so dependent on Ball and Caruso, who are both out at the same time. I'm interested to see them at full strength. I've never bought the Bulls as a real true blue contender, but I think people are dumping on them amid this losing streak a little too much. And Cleveland, I just have always thought this is all gravy for them. They're so far ahead of schedule. I don't really take them seriously as like a deep, deep playoff threat. Win a round, get a good matchup and win a round, possible, but not if Jared Allen's out for a long time.
You know, it's all gravy for Cleveland even being this good, but for Milwaukee, just to get a finer point on that, is it merely that, you know, despite Giannis looking super exhausted, you can't really bet against him and Chris and Drew?
It's hard to. They've got some questions to answer about their defense, although their defense with those three on the floor has been just fine. It would be nice to have that sort of Brook Lopez dimension back, and Serge Ibaka can kind of provide it. But yeah, I mean, those three on the floor, they have a proven track record. I think they kind of learned something about themselves in winning the title and also developed a new confidence level and ease that will serve them well in this playoff run. So to me, they're my default pick to win the East.
So, Zach, it's worth noting that as ESPN employees, there's one name we have not said that we are contractually obligated basically to say. And so after the break, LeBron James.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Zach, have you enjoyed the LeBron James experience this season? With the Lakers sliding, but LeBron peaking at age 37? Have you enjoyed this? Are you exhausted by it? Where are you on it?
I enjoy watching LeBron play, no matter what the circumstances. So I've enjoyed the LeBron experience. I've enjoyed him trying to figure out, what in the hell am I supposed to do here? Particularly with Anthony Davis out. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm playing center now. I kind of playing center, at least on offense, not really on defense. Like, who's that guy?
Right.
That guy's pretty good. I think he can shoot. Well, Stanley Johnson's on my team. Stanley Johnson's starting? Stanley Johnson's playing 35 minutes? All right, well, I got to make that work. So I always enjoy watching LeBron play. I mean, he's arguably the greatest player of all time. The Lakers discussion is, I mean, look, they're 28 and 36. And yes, of course, they're theoretically not a team you want. They're the proverbial team you're not excited to face.
Yes.
If they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, which is true.
All caps, the team you don't want to face come postseason time.
But 28 and 36 is 28 and 36, man. They're just not that good. And I was excited to watch them problem solve the Westbrook thing, because that's the kind of thing that excites me as a day-to-day basketball observer. Is, okay, here's this puzzle. And instead of a puzzle piece, you've dropped an anvil on top of the puzzle. How do we make this anvil into a puzzle piece? And I thought, it'll be fun to see them make progress and all the different things they try and all the different ways that Russ's game is tweaked and this and that. It's just an anvil.
No, Zach, it's like one of those 5,000 piece puzzles that's just of like the night sky. And you're like, I don't know how to even begin to find pieces that fit with other pieces here.
I just had a neighbor do a 4,000 piece puzzle of the world, where 3/4 of it is ocean that all looks the same. And they finished it and it's missing one piece. Can you imagine that? You finish it and see it's missing one piece. I would need to take a week off of work to search for that piece.
Well, Zach, it feels like a metaphor for like LeBron James's career at this point, right? Because what else does he need if not, like, I don't know, to prove a point that he can make even a team like this work? And what we saw on Saturday was him basically assemble that million piece puzzle, right? He scores 50 points. He becomes the oldest guy to have 55 and 10 in an NBA game ever. He was shooting 61% from the field on 31 shots. I mean, what have you learned about LeBron this year, having watched stuff like that?
I've learned to appreciate how hard what he did early in his career in Cleveland was, carrying those teams to 60 wins. And it's just hard for anybody when the pieces just are weird and ill-fitting and overlapping. It's appreciating how much he did early in his career and how hard and how important it is even if the names aren't sexy, you can go back and look at those Cavs teams. The names are not sexy.
Ira Neubel is sexy, Zach.
They made some sense at least around a player like young LeBron. And this team just, they traded all the guys who made sense other than Anthony Davis.
Yeah, LeBron is 37 now. And Nikola Jokic, incidentally, is 27. And we just saw him, Jokic, put up a 46-point triple-double on Sunday night, Zach. He scored 30 in the fourth quarter and overtime alone. So explain Nikola Jokic for those of us who have maybe been hibernating through the last season or two of the Denver Nuggets.
Which most people have been.
yes, not an exaggeration.
You know, we hear things like, well, we've never seen a player like that before. And then you're like, well, there are a couple players kind of like that before. I don't think there's ever been a player like Jokic before. He just had another triple-double last night against the Warriors. Just ho-hum, another triple-double. And again, they were like minus a lot in the 13 minutes that he had to rest in the game or whatever it is. We've just never seen a passer like this at his size who can pass from everywhere, from any position, back to the basket, 75-foot heaves, the whole thing, combined with he might be the finest post-scorer in the NBA, and he's an elite pick-and-pop three-point shooter. And so there's just no answer for a player like that who thinks three steps ahead. And in any situation, if he catches the ball with the defense in rotation, already has outsmarted you before he even catches the ball, basically. And it's just like, you know, I keep hearing from people who are skeptical of him for some reason as if he's done nothing in the playoffs, which is not true at all. He's been an incredible postseason player.
Well, what is the skepticism, Zach? Because it's very jarring to talk to people who study the game so deeply like you, and then to casual NBA fans. And I wonder, like, what is the best case against him?
Well, I've seen number one, he's only won one game in the conference finals. And there have been other players who won their first MVPs before they appeared in any games in the conference finals. And then because his advanced stats are so good, and you can take or leave advanced stats if you want. The fact is he is beyond lapping the entire field in all of them this year. There's this perception, I think, that, well, you have to look, you know, Joel's averaging 31 and 12. And to make Jokic's case, you've got to look at Vorp and Schnorp and Bipham and Schnippum and stuff that I don't understand. And it's like, not really. I mean, like 27, 14 and 8 on 58% shooting. That's just regular stats. Like that's like 27, 14, and 8. Just let that sink in for a second. That's like Shaq, but with 8 assists, or, you know, I don't know, whatever, however way you want to frame it. And then he just looks kind of schlubby. His arms are always pink. It's like a running joke. I don't know if people are slapping him or scratching him, that his arms are always pink, and it just looks, he doesn't jump, doesn't look like an MVP.
Yeah. So give me your MVP ladder right now, Zach. How does it look?
I think it's Jokic, Embiid, Giannis, and probably Jokic, Embiid in that order, but you can flip Embiid and Jokic, and I don't really have any argument for you. I mean, Embiid is just beyond ridiculous. So I would, and those three are the top three to me. And after that, I'd have to dive a little deeper into the research, but I think Ja Morant will be in that conversation. DeRozan will be there. Doncic is working his way into it. Steph is in it. And Chris Paul, I think, was in it before this injury. And Durant obviously was in it before his injury. But those would be the other names that I would look at for 4 and 5. Mm.
So you're saying Daryl Morey, general manager, will not be the first ever executive to win the MVP award?
He will not. He will not. But his center might, and that will make him very, very happy. And he has another guy who won the MVP on his roster now, who Daryl Morey will tell you, very vociferous terms, should be a multi-time MVP,
right,
not just a one-time MVP.
Zach Lowe, as always, thank you for your knowledge and your conspiracies.
Oh, my pleasure. Enjoy the game on Thursday.
It's on the calendar that does not exist. Brightly circled. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.